I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi there, Duke fans. Episode 621 of the DBR podcast, Duke Basketball Roundup. I am Jason Evans here for your listening pleasure. You're probably thinking to yourselves, wait, what are Jason and Donald doing in my feed right now? There hasn't been any real news.
We have inside information that there's no information.
Exactly. No, there has not been any news really over the weekend. I'll go ahead and dispel with this right away, which is that I think that you may, maybe you'll see like a Kyle, you know, like a really obvious thing, like maybe a Kyle Filipowski NBA draft announcement, maybe a lower tier player potentially hitting the transfer portal. Maybe you see something like that before Thursday. Thursday is the basketball banquet. I think that most of the announcements probably won't come, Donald, until after the basketball banquet. It just sometimes creates a little bit of an awkward situation otherwise. But then the other side of it is, I'm not sure, Donald, that there are going to be announcements on a lot of this stuff. I mean, I think it's possible that sort of like the transfer portal window will close and we'll be like, okay, who's still here?
I think, Jason, when it comes to things like that, right, last year it was kind of a weird situation because we had three guys who we thought, or everybody presumed to be going to the NBA, decide to come back. So there was an announcement for that. But normally that's not what Duke does. If they're graduating, if they're transferring, like the player may post something, but it's not like they're going to have a nice little highlight reel and, you know, Coach Shire talk about, oh, this is a great player and all that. If they end up, you know, transferring, if them, you know, the real guys that they save that for is the people who are going to the draft. That's it. If you're coming back, you're coming back. No news in this regard is good news for people who want some of these guys to remain. So if you hear about transfer stuff, usually it's not the university announcing that. It's usually the players saying, hey, I've entered into the portal, and that's the last you hear of it. So kind of similar to Christian Reeves, like the team has not reacted publicly, officially,
exactly
to that report. It's just been from Christian Reeves. So you're not going to really see that. So I would tell people, you know, just because, you know, don't wait for official confirmation from Duke on some of this stuff. When you hear some of this stuff and it's coming from the player, not necessarily an outlet, but if it's coming from the player, then consider that to be true.
Yeah. Well, and what's more, like a player deciding to return. Like Duke just doesn't, like you say, Duke doesn't announce anything when someone decides to return.
Yeah. Some players are just like, I'm coming back for my, I'm coming back for another year. Like, what's there to announce? I'm already here. So yeah, you may hear, you may see some of that.
I would say that the possible exception would be sort of like last year, a Jared McCain who, and maybe one, maybe a Tyrese Proctor, maybe, but someone where the presumption is sort of, oh, they're certainly looking at the draft. They very well might be in the draft. A guy like that who decides not to come back usually says something. But anyway, enough of that. I will say this. We do know there's more fallout to come because there aren't enough scholarships for everyone who's currently here now and all the incoming freshmen. So we know there, I think it's three. I think there are three additional at a minimum guys who need to leave. I would expect it'll be more than three that Duke will lose. But look, we're not here to get into that. Look, I said, hey, we're here not to talk about it. And then we talked about it for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
What we're here to talk about is guys who I would say we are very, very confident will be on campus next year. Several players who are incoming freshmen for the Duke Blue Devils appeared in the Chipotle National Championships of high school basketball. This is a big deal tournament. These are the teams that are like far and away the best. Like these teams don't even play for state titles for the most part. They don't bother. They all play a national schedule. They all play each other repeatedly. These are the absolute best teams. And these are teams where like there are multiple McDonald's All-American on every one of these teams, virtually every starter, as well as probably a couple guys off the bench on these teams will end up getting not just a Division I scholarship, but getting a scholarship to a Power Five conference team. Like there's one guy who's like the seventh man on one of these teams who's going to LSU. I was just like, you know, these are every bit teams that can compete at the college level. In fact, a friend of mine sent out a question. He was like, hey, I'm wondering that Montverde team that Cooper Flagg is on, where would they finish in the ACC standings next year? And I'm like, like, fourth or fifth?
They'd beat Boston College. We probably.
I actually said I think they'd struggle early in the year. By the end of the season, no one would want to play them. But anyway, the reason we're here is because Cooper Flagg, Darren Harris, and Patrick Ngongba all were on teams that played in the Chipotle National Championships. And actually, Cooper Flagg's Montverde team made the finals. And that's where they faced PBI of Darren Harris and Patrick Ngongba in a great game. And all of this stuff, this is what a big deal it is. High school basketball, it was all broadcast on ESPN over the weekend, Friday, on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. These were amazing matches. And it was a chance to really see, even more so than the McDonald's All-American game, it's a chance to really see these guys playing with teammates. So, you know, it's guys where it's not just 3 days of practice. They've been playing together for 6+ months. And in games that really matter, like no one remembers who won the McDonald's All-American game. Actually, the East won, but, you know, it's not a big deal. No one keeps track of that. Everyone knows who wins the Chipotle National Championship. And it was Montverde that won. Cooper Flagg's team won. But I want to discuss each one of these three guys because, Donald, I got a chance to watch them extensively. I watched all the games that they were in. And man, it is really hard not to get super excited about the Duke Blue Devils next year. I'm going to do it in this order. I'm going to do the PVI guys first, and then I'm going to do Cooper Flagg. Is that okay, Donald?
It is. And if I may add it, one, because I don't know how your notes are. I didn't read them as I normally do before the show. But what I would like you to do is start with Patrick Ngongba, because as we've discussed on this show, Patrick Ngongba has been out the entire year with injury. And we had even speculated there had been some rumors that the injury was to the point that he may have to sit out for some of even next year or even have some offseason surgery. But Jason, as you mentioned, he actually played in this game. I think it was the first game this season.
Well, he played in all three games. It was there are eight teams in this tournament. So eight, then four, then two for the title.
So for people who have not seen Patrick Ngongba play before this year and obviously haven't had a chance to see him this year, let's start with him. How did he look on the floor?
So, first of all, he looked out of shape. Not surprising. He had a foot injury, and he hasn't been able to to work out very much and get in shape. But let me tell you, he looked really good. I mean, people were surprised at how effective he could only play about 15 minutes a game, but he was scoring big time in those, like in the national championship game against Montverde, which has like one of the best big men in the country. Derek Queen is a guy who's headed to Maryland. He dominated the McDonald's All-American game. I'm telling you that Patrick Ngongba absolutely held his own against Derek Queen for the 15 minutes he was in the game. 15 minutes, Patrick Ngongba hit 5 out of 7 shots, scores 11 points, has 4 rebounds. Again, in just 15 minutes against the best big man, arguably the best big man in the country. And I was shocked at this, but in his array of what he unveiled in this game, Patrick Ngongba hit a 3-pointer. He had another really nice, like, running jumper, like spinning and running jumper in the lane. And it was shocking because he's a big guy. I mean, he has a very thick frame. And his ability, he did not shy from contact at all. His ability to be physical was impressive. Look, Ngongba needs to work on his motor. It's hard to say how big a role he plays next year, you know, because we haven't seen as much of him as we would like. But now that we know that he's healthy enough to play, now that we know that he can hold his own against, you know, really impressive opponents, it raises the question. Everyone was sort of saying that Duke was probably going to look for another big man in the transfer portal, you know, a Theo John or a Ryan Young type player. I'm not so sure that Duke is going to do that, because if Patrick Ngongba can play the way he showed, then it is very possible that that 5, 7, 10, 12 minute guy that you want off the bench to be a little more physical, that may be, we may already have him on the roster in Patrick Ngongba.
And Jason, you're mentioning this, you know, Patrick Ngongba has been the guy that's in the top 25 of all the different, you know, lists that are out there, 247, ESPN. He's been one of the top guys that they considered. He almost was predestined to be a McDonald's All-American before he got hurt before the season started, considering the fact that he was on one of the top teams in the country and was, you know, a guy who was dominating in probably the best league in high school in this country, in the, you know, Catholic League here in DC. So for him to be a guy that we can count on next year and be fully healthy would be tremendous. And I think it would change the calculus of who we go after in the portal and how the roster kind of is shaped out over the summer. Now, having said that, the only pause that I have is that we've only seen him in 3 games. It could just be like give him a little taste of what they could expect next year. And we need to see more about you talked about how his motor's not there. Yeah, of course, he hasn't played all year. I'm not overly concerned about that. And that can be a summer workout thing where he gets into shape after the injury and he fights back. But also you have to understand that sometimes foot injuries are fickle, right? We have to deal with them a lot in Duke basketball lore. We've had so many guys everyone knows what a fifth metatarsal is, and that's because of Duke basketball. So sometimes you have to bring those along slowly, and maybe Duke's plan is to bring him along slowly, and that would be the case. Then maybe they still do that. But I do think that looking at how he performed in the Chipotle National Championship, you know, the tournament, maybe that does give them pause. And also just with how volatile this roster is and how, you know, changes are probably coming in several different areas, I think we wait till that dust settles before they kind of say, okay, maybe we're counting on him more next year than we thought.
Yeah. And look, it's worth noting, he's not an explosive leaper. He is not someone who you would say, oh, that guy's just an uber athlete. But he does look very, very skilled. He is big and wide and will be difficult to move off the blocks. I was surprised to see him even playing. So I was thrilled with his performance, which was pretty good as well. All right, let me get to the other thing, which is I want to move on to Darren Harris. Playing against the absolute best players in high school basketball. And it's worth noting, Darren Harris is like, he's considered like a top 50 recruit. He is the lowest rated recruit in this entire Duke class. And I think a lot of the expectations for him have been, oh, he's a guy who's going to be on a multi-year plan. And by that, I mean, probably not play very much at all as a freshman and hopefully work his way into playing a bigger role for Duke, perhaps as a sophomore, more likely as a junior. But playing against the best players in high school basketball, Darren Harris was one of the top offensive players on the court every single game. And he was arguably the most dangerous shooter in the entire tournament. He averaged 24 points per game. Playing against IMG, IMG Academy is a big deal program.
Do they still have that 7'7" dude or 7'8" dude on IMG? They had one last year who was seven. First they listed him 7'2", and the next year they're like, oh, he's 7'7". Dude is tall. He is a skyscraper. But again, every year IMG is kind of the team that reloads rather than rebuilds.
Right, exactly. IMG has four guys on their roster who are considered among the top 100 players in the country in the class of 2024. They're really good. So playing against IMG, Darren Harris had 36 points on 12 of 21 shooting, including 5 of 9 threes. He also grabbed 7 rebounds and had 3 assists. Like I said, supposedly he's ranked in the 40s. He looks like he belongs alongside McDonald's All-Americans. There's no question about it. And after being one of the top players on the AAU circuit last summer, where his team won the title, and he was the top scorer on that team, he's now on one of the top, probably the number two high school team in the country, and he's their leading scorer. I'm sorry. He's like the leading scorer on these teams that keep on winning basketball games. That's a really big deal. And look, he was named to the all-tourney team at the Chipotle Nationals, led his team to the championship game. It is far from a given that this guy is going to be behind Isaiah Evans and Khan Knupple on the wing next season. I don't know. He's not an explosive athlete. He's not a super quick driver. He does put it on the floor a little bit. You know, if you play him to shoot the three too much, he'll go around you. He's got a wicked quick release. He has really good size. He's 6'6", great size for the wing, and it allows him to get his shot off really easily. Look, he's going to be a straight line driver. His handle isn't good enough to be like shifty with the ball and stuff like that. But I'm telling you, there's a scenario where this guy comes in and he is just scoring and scoring and scoring in practice. And John Shire goes, I got to put him in the games. I won't be shocked. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I won't be shocked if Darren Harris plays a larger role than anyone was anticipating for him next year.
And this year, he's been a certified prop. You mentioned what he did on the circuit last summer in the AAU circuit, but for PVI, as you mentioned, he has been the leading scorer. He's been a certified bucket all year long and has been doing it against, again, some of the top teams in the country. And Jason, I think when it comes to him, I don't necessarily care that he's not as athletic as some of the other guards. I don't care that he's not a guy who's going to, you know, destroy you off the handle. What I care about is the guy can somehow figure out how to put the ball in the hole more times than not. And I think that's something that's necessary. I think it's something that's needed. And I don't know what that means as far as the rotation is concerned, but I do know this. He plays like he hears and reads the internet where people are saying this kid is going to be benched next year. Yeah. He plays like he's reading that. And he goes, oh, okay, cool. And just goes out and pours. Like he's had games where he's poured 50 points, like 40 points. Like,
yeah.
He plays with that sort of chip on his shoulder. And Jason, you know what we didn't have this year? Guys with chips on their shoulders. You know what we need next year? Guys with chips on their shoulder.
Well, there's a big old chip on Cooper Flagg's shoulder.
Yeah.
Let me get to this. And I'm going to be honest. Like, look, Darren Harris and Patrick Ngongwa, it's great that we got to see them play. The reason Donald and I are doing a podcast right now is because of what Cooper Flagg did. So, oh my goodness. So first I want to start with, I got a couple emails from friends who are watching the games. Sage Grouse, who posts on the DBR boards. Sage is one of the great posters on the Duke Basketball Report bulletin boards. Sage said, Cooper's ability to seemingly see everything on the court and then know where to move, to pass, to shoot, or make a defensive move, well, it reminds me of Shane Battier. And Sage is not wrong about that. I'm going to get into why I'm seeing a lot of Shane Battier in Cooper Flagg. And then Kim Reed, who's another great Duke fan, she sent me an email. She said, the way he hustles at both ends of the floor is like no player I've ever seen. She said he has the face of a choir boy and the heart of a murderer.
Jason, you need to announce Kim Reed as who she is. She is a legend. She is the founder of K-ville. She is a legend. So don't just paint her as some,
you're right, yeah,
some run-of-the-mill person who just happened to email you. That's Kim Reed. Shout out Kim. I love Kim. Kim's great.
Yeah. Yeah, Kim was also a manager on the team for a time.
Mm-hmm.
Kim has history. Let's put it that way in Duke basketball. So here's what I want to say about Cooper Flagg. So at the end of the third quarter in the championship game against PVI, PVI was keeping it close. Like, by the way, Cooper Flagg's Montverde team was not challenged at all year. Like, they went undefeated. They were an absolute juggernaut. But at the end of the third quarter, it was close. PVI was only down 12 points. That's a close game. And they were about to shoot a three-pointer that could have made it single digits entering the fourth quarter. But the guy shooting the three-pointer forgot that Cooper Flagg was in his area code. Flagg blocks the three-pointer, grabs the ball, and goes down and dunks it as time expires. It's a stunning play. And this wasn't like a desperation three. It was just a normal open look that Cooper Flagg erased and turned into 2 points the other way. His length, his athleticism, his anticipation are a terror on defense. I've watched a good bit of high-end college basketball over the years. Look, I'm not a diehard scouter, recruiting guru or anything like that, but I've watched a bit of it. I've never seen a player like Cooper in terms of his motor and his understanding of the game. I think, you know, folks tend to focus on like obvious skills, like does he shoot three-pointers or what are his shot block statistics and does he drive to the hole? It's easy with Cooper Flagg to overlook the degree to which feel and movement and geometry impact the effectiveness of a player. Cooper Flagg gets like a, you know, 1 out of 10, he gets a 10 plus rating on feel, on movement, on motor, on geometry. The Shane Battier comparison is quite good. Shane was another guy like that who just understood where the game was shifting and moving. You know, Shane, run around and make plays. I got a feeling you could say to Cooper Flagg, hey, Cooper, run around and make plays on day one. Shane was doing that as a senior. And it's worth noting, not only did Shane develop that over time, but Cooper is kind of a super elite athlete. And like, I'm not saying Shane was a very good athlete, but the degree to which Cooper can jump and move and use his long arms and his long stride, I mean, these just aren't things that Shane had in his toolkit. And I mean, one example that I saw when I was watching the games this week was how he went for block shots. And this is going to seem crazy because this is a guy who blocks shots like no one ever. In the championship game, he had six block shots against PBI. he doesn't try to block every shot, though. He contests stuff, puts his hands up, he jumps, but he understands the difference between I'm getting this one and if I go too hard after this one, I will put myself in a bad place to get a rebound and I may commit a foul. It is one of 1,000 tiny little things that he does that impacts winning. And sure, Montverde is an undefeated juggernaut because they have an outrageous amount of talent on their roster. But Cooper Flagg is next level at stitching it all together for the other guys on the floor, making everyone around him better ball players. And then the last thing is, look, the one thing that wasn't supposed to be in his toolbox was the three. He was, you know, he's a guy who shoots some three-pointers, but the book on him was he's not going to be that great an outside shooter. On the season, he hit 38% from three. That's pretty good. He was taking multiple threes per game. It's a big step up from where he was a year ago when his outside shot was his biggest weakness. And in the three-game national championship, when things were on the line, when he was playing the best teams in all of high school basketball, he was 5 of 8 on three-pointers in those three games. It's hard to describe statistically the way Cooper Flagg impacts the game of basketball. You have to watch him to really understand it. But man, I just think we're in for such a treat next year. And maybe I'm putting the expectations too high on him. Maybe, I mean, good God, I'm talking about a freshman, a guy in high school, and I'm comparing him to Shane Battier. That's unfair. But at the same time, it's impossible not to watch him and just see all the ways that he impacts the game and his understanding of the game in a body of a physical freak. I mean, this is why he's considered the best prospect since Anthony Davis.
And you're not talking about a guy who is in high school versus, again, one of the greatest college players that ever existed. You're talking about a kid who, in theory, academically, is a junior, and he's reclassifying to be a senior so that he can get here a year early and play for Duke. Like, this is a kid who is very, very young, but also wise beyond his years. Jason, everything that you just said, I don't need to mimic. I don't need to say it again. You said it very well. What I will add is this. The man also knows that they are not going to play around next year. The man, did you hear the comments that he had, him and Isaiah Evans had during the McDonald's All-American game? Like, when they were just like, look, whatever happened, because the one thing I think is interesting, I mentioned chips on shoulders, and you mentioned that no one has a bigger chip on their shoulder than Cooper Flagg, because he was at that UNC game, and yeah. So was Isaiah Evans, and both of them said, that is not happening again next year under our watch if we have anything to say about it. That's what I want. I think that's what all Duke fans want. The guys are going to come in and understand that, hey, yes, we made it to the Elite Eight, but we want more. We want another banner. We want another couple banners to be hanging in Cameron as a result of next season. And I like that they're embracing that part of the challenge, because all of this here, I mean, getting to the national championship game is going to be one hell of a task, but they are embracing that part of it. The fact that they are entering the game where everyone's looking at this as number one. They're going to give us their best shot. Let them. That's the chip on the shoulder that I'm looking for. And it's clear that at least those two guys have it. And I'm really, really excited to see about the other ones.
Yeah. Look, I go back to the comment by Kim Reed, you know, the face of a choir boy and the heart of a murderer. Cooper Flagg plays hard every single second. He considers it an insult that you think you can be on the court with him and beat his team. And he wants to prove to you that it is offensive that you would dare challenge him.
How dare you step up?
Dare you think you can beat me? It's the kind of attribute, and again, I'm going too far, but it's the kind of thing that you see in guys like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. And again, that's too far. He's nowhere near the offensive.
Let me bring him back down out of the heavens and just focus on the clouds.
Make him mortal.
Right?
Make him mortal.
Yeah. The comparison that I have is, you remember in 2019, you'd have Zion and RJ Barrett, and they had that game where they're just like, oh, it was after the Louisville game when they came back and we had the lost episode. And they basically said, we wore black today because we were coming to their funeral. That's the type of mentality that we want Duke players to approach. And that's the mentality that I think Cooper Flagg has. The guy, he's going to come in, he's going to say, how dare you step onto this court against us and think that you're going to walk out of here with a victory? Not on my watch. That's what we're looking for, and that's what we want to see next year.
And it's so rare. It's so rare to find that in a guy who can
also have the talent to back that up, right? It's exactly. One thing I can say that. Like, you're going to be a long day. I can say that from the stands as much as I want, but I can't do anything to back that up on the court. He can.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, there's been some basketball going on. Duke may not have been playing, but we got to talk a little bit about the national semifinals, the final four games, and the women's national title game. Just happened a few hours ago. We'll have that on the other side.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, Donald, I've done a lot of talking so far. It's your turn, my man. I want to start with the national semifinals. UConn beating Alabama and Purdue taking out NC State. I don't want to get into like, were we rooting, you know, who were you rooting for? I was rooting for NC State just because I think it's a great story and it's a lot of fun. And those guys have a great love of the game. But give me your thoughts. Not too long. We don't need to go into great detail about what you saw in those two games. And then, you know, maybe a little bit of what you expect Monday night for the national title.
On the men's side, I know we're talking about the men and women, so let's start with the men, as you mentioned. I am so perplexed at the fact that Purdue is in a national championship a year after losing in the first round as a one seed. If you were go back to 2018, when UMBC beat Virginia in the first round, the first 16 seed on the men's side to knock out a one seed, the next year, UVA went all the way. They had a couple of bumps along the road. They had a couple of lucky plays that happened that kind of got them to overtime or things like that. They had some close games in the tournament, and then they were able to win a national championship. And Purdue is on the cusp of doing that again, become the second one seed to lose as a one seed the year before, and then come back next year and win it all. I don't know if that changed the calculus of the NCAA tournament, Jason. Maybe some one seeds are going to be like, all right, let's punt on this season. Let's kind of throw the 16th seed, and then we'll run the table next year. But it's absolutely amazing how they have gotten to this point. And with Zach Edey back-to-back, you know, national player of the year, almost every single one that you can hand out, he's gotten it. And for great reason, he's been the best player in college basketball the last couple of years. That's what you want to see. You want to see the best players be on the biggest stage and go for the biggest trophy. On UConn's side, they're just a monster. Let's just put it plain. They have been playing out of their minds. And we talked about how to get to the Final Four, they had a 30-0 run in one game. Just to take, you know, I don't even remember who they played that game, took them out of their misery. And they just had that effect where Dan Hurley, it's not even like all these guys individually are so stellar that you're like, man, this is one of the best players in the country. But as a team, it sucks to say that they are one of the best teams out there. They are just absolutely methodical and clinical with their instruction. And I think that poses a very intriguing matchup on Monday night when they face Purdue. Because again, Klingon and Zach Edey, they're going to go toe-to-toe. And I feel
if I can jump in just for a second.
Yeah.
Like, the thing that has me excited about Monday night is that I feel like we're getting the two best teams. No offense to Houston, who Duke took out, but it really feels like this is the two best teams. And some years you do. A couple years ago, we got Baylor, Gonzaga, and those were the two best teams.
Mm-hmm.
But some years you don't. Last year, UConn, San Diego State was not the two best teams. No offense to those teams. Good, you know, yeah. But those were not the two best teams in all of college basketball last year. This year, I think for sure we've got the two best teams. And the really exciting thing is we have the unstoppable force of Zach Edey, like literally setting records, doing stuff that hasn't been done in decades in college basketball. Just won he's about to win National Player of the Year for the second year in a row, which hasn't been done like since Elijah won or something like that. It's like something insane how long it's been that since anyone's won back-to-back Player of the Year. Unstoppable force in Zach Edey and the immovable object of Donovan Klingon protecting the basket. And in this tournament, Donovan Klingon has been just outrageous. Look, we're used to like, it's a 7-footer. It's 7-4 against 7-2. Like, right. These are guys who make Kyle Filipowski look small. It is so compelling as a matchup. And I'm just so excited to see how it turns out.
And I think on Zach Edey's side, if you think about it, every single game that he's faced in this tournament so far, he has faced the guy where everyone's like, oh, this might be the guy that can get Zach Edey, that can shut him down. And five times he has gone up against somebody, and five times he has succeeded and been the better player. Now you again have this thing where people go, I don't know, man. Donovan Klingon might be able to get him, might be able to shut him down because UConn is just that good. Maybe this is Zach Edey's destiny. Maybe this is his tournament. Maybe this is his ability to be able to walk off into the sunset as a national champion after the trials and tribulations that he experienced last year while still leading the nation and everything. Maybe this is it, but also maybe this is just the time of a new era where UConn has finally figured out how to be good and stay good for an entire year. Because if you think about it, a lot of their national champions that they've won, they haven't been the best team in the country.
Yeah.
This year they've been one of the best teams in the country. Now how can they maximize that and turn it into, I mean, it's the deepest that a national champion has been in the tournament since
Florida
won, you know, back to back in 2007, 2008. So this is that battle is going to be stellar. And I'm looking forward to it. I am pulling for Purdue because I just can't see UConn winning anything and be happy about it. But that's just me. But I think Purdue, I honestly think Purdue has a destiny to be in this game. And it's going to be interesting to see if they can just close out against a team that most people think has been playing better than them this entire time.
Yeah. And last thing I want to add is I think there are a lot of people out there who go, oh, Zach Edey, he's just so big. You know, oh, he's only good because he's so big. No. There are guys who are that size who are not any good at basketball. He has worked super hard at his game to improve. You just look at the player he was a year ago and the way he plays today. He's just way better. This is a guy who is, yeah, he's 7'4", like 300 pounds or something absurd like that. But you know what? He has put in the work. He has earned all the accolades he's getting. And the reason I'm rooting for Purdue to win the game is because I feel like Zach Edey deserves it. Again, not to say UConn doesn't deserve it, but I think the degree, this guy was not a highly touted recruit. Like even with his size, Purdue took a risk on him when they brought him in because he just wasn't a very good basketball player when he arrived at Purdue, but he has worked and worked and worked. Every year he identifies aspects of his game he needs to get better at. Like he doesn't foul anymore. He blocks shots, but he doesn't foul. I don't even know how he does it, but that's what has me really excited for the national title game, and I'm hoping Purdue can shock the world because frankly UConn is just so next level that everyone just assumes they're going to win. Hey, let's shift really quick. I watched the women's national championship game. I watched the Final Four. I've watched a few games in the tournament. I'm not the world's biggest women's college basketball fan. I will freely admit that. So I'm not going to go into a lot of analysis of the game. Man, it was a heck of a game though. That South Carolina team is just outstanding. They have unbelievable depth. They are both over, you know, I said to someone, I'm like, it feels like you combined Purdue and Alabama because they have overwhelming size on the inside. They've got the female Zach Edey in the middle at South Carolina, but then they've surrounded her with outrageous outside shooters who were just burying shot after shot after shot. There's a reason South Carolina was undefeated this year. But this Iowa team really hung tight for a long time. And Caitlin Clark, her first quarter, the first 10 minutes of that game, will live on forever. I think it was 18 points she had.
Mm-hmm.
And she had her team in the lead against this undefeated juggernaut. And all of us were believing that it could happen. It didn't end up happening because that's how good South Carolina is. But what an amazing way for perhaps the greatest college career, male or female, of all time. What a great way for it to end with her playing the way she did on the biggest stage. And the ratings are going to be monstrous for that game.
Look, I have a lot of thoughts on the Caitlin Clark thing. I will save that for another time. I will say this about the women's tournament. It has been light years better than the men's tournament this year. And I don't think that is a controversial thing to say. This tournament has been absolutely fantastic from start to finish, and the best team won it all. keep this in mind, Jason, and I know you dabble in the women's game, but you don't necessarily watch it as much as I or even others. You know, there's others that watch it way more than even I do. But Dawn Staley, the head coach for South Carolina, has lost 3 times in 3 years. Three in 3 years. She went undefeated this year. And Jason, she went undefeated this year. South Carolina went undefeated while having to redo their entire starting five. That one, not one person from their starting five last year that went to the Final Four and lost to Iowa in the semifinal came back. And she turned that team and took Camila Cardoso, who was one of the top, was in the same class, entering a high school class as Caitlin Clark and several others, Angel Reese. And they were able to run through the entire non-conference slate, which was no slouch. Duke played them during the regular season. It was not as close. I thought Duke played well, but it wasn't close because that's how good South Carolina was. They ran through the SEC, including beating LSU, I believe, 3 times during the course of the regular season and the SEC tournament to get to the national, get to the NCAA tournament. And then they ran through that and went undefeated, beating Iowa in the process, beating an NC State team in the process that they were down or whatever at halftime. My goodness, Jason, this team was absolutely incredible to watch. I think a lot of people rightfully have been talking about Caitlin Clark and how good she's been and how historic her season has been. She scored the most points, I believe, in one season that in NCAA history, I think men or women, but not a lot of people talked about what Dawn Staley did for the South Carolina Gamecocks squad and how this squad played from start to finish. They were the most dominant team that I have seen in a very long time. There's been those UConn teams that went undefeated. There's been a couple Tennessee teams that went undefeated. Baylor, when they had Brittany Griner, went undefeated. But this team was not only beating teams, they were beating them bad. They were, they'd go on similar runs that we saw like UConn on the men's side have done. They do that every single game. And Dawn has this way, especially at halftime, of making sure that when you come out for the third quarter, you understand that the game is already over because at halftime, she already won it. She, every single time that they come out after halftime, they absolutely would destroy their opponent into existence. It just absolutely wiped off the face of the planet. So I am so happy for Dawn Staley. She's been one of my favorites for a very, very long time with, going back to when she was playing in the WNBA. And the fact that she has translated that into being an elite coach is nothing short of incredible. And hats off to all the women who played in this tournament because it was a fantastic tournament to watch from start to finish. They set records for viewership and all of that. And it goes to show, put more games on ESPN and on ABC and all that. People will tune in and watch. And the great thing, Jason, is some of the best players in this tournament aren't going anywhere. You have the Juju Watkins and the Beers and even Haley Van Lith, all those players are coming back next year. So you get a little bit more continuity in the women's game instead of, the one and dones, because it's just not frankly how they do things on the women's side. They stick around. So the fact that we have so many of these players coming back, wow, the future of college basketball on the women's side is in great hands. And the great thing is, as Duke fans, we're hoping that Duke is going to be a part of that conversation next year, because I think, again, they have a good class coming in. They have some players, hopefully, that they'll retain and maybe get a couple more in the portal where they can be inserted into that conversation of one of the great teams in this country. So, what a great tournament. I'm glad everybody who tuned in to watch did. And if you didn't, you missed out on something special. And hopefully you get to tune in a little bit next year and see what you missed out on.
Yeah. By the way, Duke, I believe, has a top five, top seven or so recruiting class in the country. Coach Kara is building something for sure in Durham, and that's very exciting.
And it was noted, I know we didn't talk about the fact that she was one of the people listed as a candidate of interest, shall we say, for the Tennessee job. Right. It was reported earlier this week or earlier this weekend that she did not interview for that job and told them, thanks, but no thanks. So again, like David Cutcliffe situation, she already has a job in Durham and she's staying in Durham. I think that bodes well for the portal and also just, again, bringing back some of these players next year to make a run in the ACC.
Yep, for sure. All right, that's going to wrap it up here on the latest edition, episode 621 of the DBR podcast, the Duke Basketball Roundup. He is Donald Wine. I am Jason Evans. We'll be back on your feed very, very soon, as soon as there's news about what's going on in Durham. As soon as we hear anything, we will let you know. Until then, here's the Duke Band to play us out and take us home.